Coming on at this late stage, nearly everything's been said, but just a few personal reminiscences. I feel a bit of an imposter since I came from a low to middling, which is sort of a euphemism, a low to middling degree in maths to work as this sort of computer dog's body in France's group in 1965, the start of the online era when computers were just starting to be used to take data and control experiments. And we had a ranch finish formica covered computer about this big, which had less intelligence in it than this digital watch. And those are the kind of things we had to use in those days, programming in bits and bytes, programming these things to do the things we wanted to do. My first day, I wondered what on earth I'd let myself in. The stamp of a desk in the huts, temporary huts, remember it's post-war huts after the war, and there we still were, and I think they lasted several years longer than that. I had a postage stamp of a desk, and I arrived after lunch and could hear snoring. I peeked through the crack in the door of Franz's minuscule office, also a postage stamp of a desk, and saw the boss with his feet up, sleeping, and I thought, what on earth is this going to be like for the next few years? That was characteristic. He had this fantastic capability to take a cat nap of 2 minutes and derive as much satisfaction from it as most of us would derive from a full night's sleep. He was an outstanding experimentalist. I used to enjoy working with him on night shifts and watch him and his dexterity in improvising little bits of equipment to do things in the long hours as we worked on the accelerator. And it was a joy to watch. He was always innovative and managed to get things working. I used to marvel at it. He was also completely without any acknowledgement of hierarchy. For him, if he was on shift, he was a worker like the rest of us. And he would be laying cables and labeling them in the dead of night, just like all the research students and the most menial of the members of the team. There was no sort of distinction between him and the rest of the team. He was, of course, as has already been remarked on, a wonderful teacher. Enormous clarity in explaining the most difficult topics. I will always remember, even to this day, the actual title of a paper which he gave to me to study as a second year PhD project. We all had to do projects, and this was the base paper was an article in Physics Letters or somewhere by a lady called Hoff, and I well remember the analysis that I had to try and understand, and Franz would try and explain it to me. Sometimes with modest success, but that was my fault rather than his. I remember that with my maths background, he actually met my parents, and he said that unfortunately Roland has to write a PhD on physics, even though he's working on online computers. So we have to teach him some physics, but what he knows about physics is probably less than the tip of the proverbial iceberg. So that's stayed with me all my life, and I certainly would never call myself a physicist, although I'm very proud to have been associated with his group. One of the things which hasn't been mentioned, and David Bold reminded me that Franz had died a few weeks ago, was the fact that Franz always had time to give to college. He was a great college man, a great UCL man, and he found time to work on numerous committees. He was enormously influential in setting up the computer center, of which I'm an heir in a way in my current job. And a lot of it was due to him. And he sat on various national committees, the computer board, and so on. So one mustn't forget his sort of college and nationwide citizenship. Andy has remarked on that's Brian Anderson, to those who don't know him by that name, has remarked on his political views and the fact that he was always conscious of the fact that he came from South Africa, from which he'd emigrated to escape apartheid, and also he'd foregone the privileges of being an Afrikaner. And I ran an anti-apartheid group here, and he was always willing to act as a chairman for meetings. I remember one particularly where the then Archbishop of Cape Town came against apartheid. His hobbies have been remarked on, but for him, his hobbies were not a sideline. They were as important as his day job. And whatever he touched, he had to become a professional. And you can see from the picture of the ruby, which he carved for George Calmus's wife, the extent he would take that hobby and all his others. He had an enormous sense of fun, a great joie de vivre, a love of good wine, food, conversation and people, discussion, controversy. I remember when he was appointed professor, when he remarked that, up to now I've been a reader. You can be a reader for gross moral turpitude, but as a professor, the moral turpitude has we're especially pleased, of course, to have Marie with us today. She was very much part of his life, and the two of them, for me, go hand in hand, both literally and figuratively. And my family were very pleased to have had counted both of them as among their dearest friends. And I have a lovely photo of Franz at my dad's 70th birthday. You can almost hear, in a still photograph, almost hear the characteristic guffaw which Franz is enjoying. I cannot, though, I think Fred Bullock can recall a crossword from Franz. I can't recall him ever uttering a crossword, and perhaps Marie may also be able to may also deny that that's the case. But certainly he was extremely popular, and one measure of his popularity was the unanimous vote he got from all his colleagues in the department on his election as the Quain Professor at UCL, succeeding the great Harry Massey. And another mark of the esteem in which people hold him is the fact that we've managed to fill this lecture theatre today with people who wanted to pay tribute to a really great scientist and human being. Thank you very much.